we'll go ahead and start. So in case you haven't seen my name tag, I'm Judy, and I am a teacher here. I teach third and fourth. My co-teacher is sitting on the couch in the black. My mother is sitting on the couch in black as well. My sister-in-law and my brother-in-law's brother. Anyway, nice to have you all here. The subject that we get to look into is one that is exciting to me. I really love music and I love singing, and it's something that I have always loved. I remember when I was a student in school, music class or choir, which we would have had in the upper grades, was definitely a highlight for me. And so when I became a teacher a few years after I was out of school, I kind of expected music class to be very much the same way, teaching it. And I was really unprepared for the difference between being a student and a teacher. It was just an absolute culture shock. I wasn't prepared for the boredom I got from my students, and it just seemed like they were always ready to have a behavior issue, and it felt like I couldn't get them to remember anything. When I look back at those first years that I taught, and particularly that first year, very distinctly I remember belly aches. I think it was Tuesday that I had to teach music, and really a lot of fear. I was, at that point, very afraid of the children, and it might sound kind of funny. I was afraid of them just being chaotic, and I couldn't do anything about it. And I was also, I know now, I wasn't really okay with the way children just can be. And so loving and enjoying teaching music is something that has come back to me, but it's come back pretty slowly. But it is back, and I would say it's probably back to stay. And I think no matter what our experience has been, it's probably pretty normal to at some point ask, is music actually that important? I'll move so you don't have to stare into someone's head. So I'd like to look into it a bit, just kind of very briefly what music can do to us and for us. So if we go all the way back to the beginning, to a baby, when a baby is born, you know, they can't see well. There are actually a lot of things they can't do well, but they can hear well. They may not understand the language that they're hearing, but they do hear well. And basically what they're hearing is music. So we are born wired for music. So I'm going to draw just a bit here. I'm going to use blue to represent music. So this is basically showing what a baby is hearing. Okay. So as the baby grows and develops, they start making sense, they start processing that language that's in the music, and maybe they start understanding a word here and a word there, but it's not really connected. They might start copying. And as they continue growing, those little words start connecting, and it becomes more kind of like this little, you might call it a mountain of language. And notice that underneath is a foundation of music that doesn't go away. There's some interesting research that shows that music in our brains is the precursor to language. It's kind of like the foundation. And singing or being sung to is a fundamental need for a child to develop as they ought to. And song is basically a child's first language of telling them that they're safe, they're secure, and they're loved. So if you skip just a few years to first grade, so if you teach first grade, and even if you don't, you know there's a lot going on for them. They're still loads of auditory and language processing. They're learning sounds, they're connecting symbols with the sounds, they're learning facts, just all kinds of stuff coming into their brain. A lot of heavy brain work for them. So interestingly, the auditory processing networks, in other words, very simply the spaghetti that makes that brain work, connecting that makes that brain work possible, is that those networks are trained and strengthened by music learning. And we're going to come back to that term music learning later. So if we think of music learning, adding yet another layer to this foundation, making it more solid for the processing and building the language on top of that. In our brain, when we read or learn to read, we use a lot of the same areas as we do when we learn music, and the networks overlap a lot. It's interesting to me that studies have shown that a child's ability to keep a steady, consistent beat, they would say for about 2 to 3 minutes, that ability corresponds with their readiness to read. They would say that actually a child who struggles with reading or learning to read, have them try to keep a beat, and you'll a lot of times see that those two go together. So what they say that keeping a steady beat does in the brain is it basically stabilizes the brain, putting another layer in that foundation for them. If we look at the brain then, and prepare to be amazed by the lifelike drawing, we know that we have two sides, or hemispheres, to the brain, or in the brain, and there are nerves connecting the two sides of the brain, basically helping them work together. So when a child gets to the age, kind of between 6 and 8 years old, the brain starts to become very sensitive to motor or movement development and also the auditory processing. So it's kind of like the brain is just ready to soak up information, kind of like a sponge. So that starts between ages 6 and 8, and then starting at grade 3 and going on through grade 6, these nerves that are in the brain connecting go through a growth spurt. So suddenly the two sides, or maybe not so suddenly, the two sides of the brain can connect more. And if we add in a third ingredient, if you want to this brain stew, I'd like to add in music. So when we learn music, we use both sides of the brain at the same time. And they would say that it's actually one of the only activities that we do that uses both sides at the same time. So our brain is working at max capacity with learning music. And because of that, it makes music an easy way to put information into the brain. And if you think of a sensitive brain that's connecting more, think about using music to put information in. You know, imagine trying to learn, well, we all know the song Rock of Ages. I mean, imagine learning it as a poem this long versus as the song. You know, which one is more easy to learn? And song is not just something you'll find in a songbook or something like that. You can turn anything into a song. It could be a song or a chant. It could be math facts or countries and geography. If you teach living threads, you'd probably use that already. Maybe sound rhymes or spelling words. You know, really, music is fundamental to our learning and our well-being. Music has been shown that it can strengthen our memory, it can reduce stress, boost confidence at any rate, self-esteem, and they also will use music to heal minds or the brain when there's been trauma. So I believe that music is a specific gift to us from God to use. So I mentioned the term music learning, and I'd like to look into a bit what that means and what it can mean for each of us as a teacher in the classroom. So music learning does generally refer to actually learning an instrument, and depending what community you're in, that just isn't going to work for you. But it does apply to one instrument that we do have, and that is our voice. That is considered an instrument. And a lot of elements that you would learn with learning an instrument actually directly apply to singing or to teaching our students to sing. So I'm going to write down, as I go, some of the just some main areas that we can work on. Music. I should have checked which of these write best. So the first one I have is, big surprise, the beat. So the beat in a song is the backbone of the song, basically. It's so important to be able to feel it and to be able to pick that out, to be able to feel the beat in you, that you don't have to depend on someone else or something. So teach your students to feel the beat. I mean, have them clapping. You can have them stomping, snapping their fingers, tapping. Tapping on their chest is a great way because they really can feel it well. You could have them beating simple time up and down, or marching and swinging their arms. The beat isn't just for in singing. You could even just work on them being able to keep a consistent beat, and using a metronome is excellent for that. There's no forgiveness going off of beat there. You can have them feeling the beat when you're singing, if you're listening to music, chanting facts, marching out for recess. You know, use your imagination anytime. And right along with the beat is rhythm. So if we think of beat as the steady pulse through a song or a chant, it doesn't change. Rhythm instead is like a little beat that pulses with the syllables. So if I were to chant the song, God is so good, the beat would go through like this. God is so good. And the rhythm would be, God is so good. So they're very intertwined, rhythm and beat are. You can have your students clap rhythm patterns, have them listen to what you clap and clap it back at you. Very simple ones, you can have them count as well. Simple 1, 2, and 3, 4. And the options are endless there. An interesting note about rhythm. So I guess they consider the English language, I'm sorry, I keep seeing you looking at me like this, I'll move. I guess they consider the English language one of the only what they'd call unmetered languages. In other words, it doesn't have a natural rhythm and flow to it. So natural rhythm and flow, think of like poems. Okay, you don't have to put that in. It's more accented and unaccented. So they'd say that children who have English as their primary language might have a little bit of a harder time getting a hold of rhythm. So just have to work them a little harder, probably. A second item to work on is the scale. So we use the scale all the time when we sing. And I think that children should and are capable of getting a really good hold on it when they're young. Teach them the shapes of the notes, the names that go with the notes, how to spell them correctly. I love to have the color, very colorful shaped notes on my wall, which I don't have here today. You can also teach them the lines and spaces, and a very literal hands-on teaching is using your hand as a staff. You have 5 fingers for the 5 lines, 4 spaces. And it will give them something to do with their hands at the same time. Third one that I have is music theory. And before that term would alarm you, I think your music curriculum would probably cover that pretty well at this point. So no matter what your curriculum is, I'd encourage you to know it and just give it all you've got. Also teach your students to read music. As you'll notice, one of my strong points as a teacher is not my writing. So hopefully you can read it. So reading music, very simply, is being able to look at a note, sing the name and the pitch, go on to the next note, sing that name and that pitch related to the pitch you just came from. Start them off with simple lines of music, not big jumps between notes. And as they're more capable, put bigger jumps between the notes, more complicated lines. You can also have them sing the notes to a familiar song where they know the tune. They don't have to really be worrying about where their voice is going. They can focus on the notes. You can also work at training their ear a bit. And in a lot of these things, you know, young children probably aren't going to get very accomplished at things like this. And I don't think that's anything to worry about. It's more like introducing them and working on them. So you can call your students' attention to listening if they're off key. And I realize that may not work for those who would say can't sing on tune or have a difficulty with that. You can have them listen for if they get to the end of the song and they can tell that they're too high, or maybe not as often, too low. One thing I like to do is have them, whether we're singing a scale or a song, have them hold the end note and then blow the pitch pipe and have them listen how the two sounds are meshing. And they can tell you pretty quickly if it's not right, and then work on them to tell you how they would need to correct their voices. You could also sing intervals and then have them guess. Did you sing from do to re, or did you sing from do to fa? Okay, and then I'm going to go just a bit to our voice, and I'm not professional on this at all. It's just some things that have been taught me and I think are important. So the first one is pitch. And I think that this can be one of the trickiest parts of singing. So just a little informational bit for you to put in your teacher cap. They say that a child's foundational pitch is trained between the ages of 3 and 6, and basically by a female voice, so that probably means their mom. And so it would just be interesting for you to note that and kind of see where that's coming from, where their pitch is coming from. Now, that doesn't mean it can't be trained. So I have some ideas for pitch, and this isn't necessarily to correct pitch. I do not have a lot of experience with that, but more just some exercises that you can work with. You can do high sighs, showing with your hand. Work a bit on their range, or you could go the opposite way. You sing a pitch and hold it, and they bring their voice up to you. Or you could have individual students who are brave enough sing a pitch, and you bring your voice to theirs. You could give them objects and tell them to stack them, and as they stack them, their voice goes up with the stack. A very similar idea is using your hand to show if you're going up or down. Another thing that I like to use is echo songs. It doesn't work with every song, where you as the teacher sing the line or phrase, and then the students repeat it back at you. Maybe just a very simple thing would be to make sure that your students can hear you well. And I will often put a student who struggles a bit right in front of someone who sings more confidently, just to give them an earful of good sound. There's a little booklet that goes along with the, or it comes from, the Singing School series. I have not actually used it. My co-teacher Mel, I believe, has some. I think it stands pretty much alone. It's not like you have to use it with a curriculum or any place in the curriculum. It's called Everyone Can Sing, Paths to Singing on Tune. And yeah, just from what I looked through, I think it looks like a good resource. Another part of your voice is your breathing. I don't know, I may get myself in trouble here. This is something that when someone tried to teach me how to do it, it took me forever to learn. Much puffing and I don't know what all in front of a mirror. So if you think of breathing, first of all, it starts with posture. So standing tall, relaxed. And maybe if you could you do this at all while you're sitting? I know your laps are full of folders and stuff. So chin up, chest up, and then chest does not move. Instead, down here moves. So with a nice full stomach. So think deep, relaxed, and breathing with your diaphragm. So you can start your students off with trying to get their stomachs to go straight out. And so if you put your hands on your ribs, and old breath out, and stomach goes straight out. Old breath out. And then the more technically correct way is the stomach does go out, but you basically expand all over, even they say out your back, which sounds a little painful, so a little bit more like this. My chest is probably moving, I don't know. It's a little hard to breathe with when you're a little uptight. Anyway, something just to work on them, and believe me, they will try so hard and get so uptight and just moving their chest and shoulders as much as possible. But something to work on them with. And one thing to note, I was told that if you are breathing correctly, you get about 3 or 4 breaths in and you'll get lightheaded. So there's your knowing if you're doing it correctly or not. So once you get them breathing deep, relaxed breaths, you can also work on them breathing quietly. I don't think it's necessary to hear the breaths that they take. Can also work on them a bit of when to breathe. Work on them to try to make it to the end of the line or phrase. And if they can't make it to the end of line or phrase, at least to the end of the word. I had that this year. I don't think I've ever had it before. A few of them would almost make it to the end of the line, and then there would be this pause right in the middle of a word. Anyway, then they'd come back and finish the word, so we had to work on that a while. Along with your pitch and breathing is how your voice sounds, or your tone of voice. And that's not referring to a happy or an angry tone of voice. There can be lots of tones. Is it scratchy or breathy, or does it sound like their nose is plugged up? Or is it sharp or pinched? So just an idea of a tone to aim for with children. Think big, not necessarily always loud, but big and bright. So some things you can work on them a bit is getting them to open their mouths, first of all. They say 2 fingers, and that doesn't work for every sound. Also their jaw, and that refers to more back here. If that's just opening like that. Okay? And also work on their throat. So a pinched throat is going to sound kind of tight, and it can actually change your pitch a bit. Whereas an open throat, get the feeling of right before you yawn. Okay? Nice and open. Okay? Kind of like you're almost in a cave. And that's going to really help them for high notes. You might have to work on them getting it out the top. And have them imagine, instead of your voice coming out of your mouth and nose, imagine it going out the top of your head. Whatever, show them how. And they're not going to get it perfectly, but maybe putting it in their minds a bit, things to work for. Show them how it looks, show them how it sounds. Be okay with looking dumb or them laughing at you, unfortunately. One final point that I have, I'm sorry, I should just leave this thing off. I hate that sound. A final point with singing is a little bit how we sing the song. Maybe I won't write that down. So words aren't meant to be just spoken by themselves in a choppy way. And I don't think it's meant to be that way in singing either. So if in the song, "This is my father's world," if I were to sing, "This is my father's world," that's in a choppy way, each word being emphasized. With a phrase, we have a beginning and an ending, kind of like an arch. So it'd be more, "This is my father's world." Anyway, it makes a difference in the sound of the song. They're still gonna chop a bit, but it's kind of like getting them these things in their minds that they can come back to when they're more capable, when they're older. There are also dynamics and expression in a song, very simple dynamics that children can look for in a song. So tell me in a child's language what these mean.
This doesn't work.
In a song? P means to sing.
Quiet.
Right, softly.
I know that these work. I'll go back to blue.
Okay, F means? Yes, thank you. Rit means?
Slow down.
Mm-hmm. And the hairy eyebrow that will make them laugh every time. Watch the leader. In other words, the leader can stop you or can make you go through. And you might have to show them how that means or what that means. Have the students look at a song and tell you what kind of a song it is. Is it happy and excited, or is it sad, or is it sleepy, or is it gentle? And then explain to them how this will make a difference in your voice and show them how it will make a difference. Something I have to remind myself about quite a bit is that no students are perfect and no teacher's perfect. And I think at some point we all probably will or have run into rough situations with music and singing. Maybe more on the negative side, you know, we might feel like our students don't like music, or maybe they think it's dumb, or behavior's a really big issue. So I'd like to consider just a few things about singing itself. So I'm of the opinion that music is one of the most vulnerable things that you will do. If you think about it, it involves all of you. You, your body, your soul, spirit, your mind, your emotions. It's an expression of the inside of you, and it kind of exposes that inside part that can be hurt. And I have this thought that a lot, not all, but a lot of behavior and attitude issues actually come from that. That feeling vulnerable and not knowing how to handle it, you know. When we feel that way, we can react in different ways. Sometimes we might react by hiding. Think of a child who just will not be heard. Or we might react by covering up. By a child who is loud or disruptive. And I'm sure there could be a lot of other ways. And I'm not saying that this is the only thing that makes behavior issues. There are other things that you have to deal with. So something that I think of as a teacher, that I think it's important for me to make the singing space as safe as I can. And I personally feel safe when my ability is accepted, no matter how it compares to the people around me. And if there's progress, that's acknowledged. If I need some help, if it doesn't sound quite right, that I'm given help and not just criticism. When I make mistakes, they're not made a big deal. And when there is an enthusiasm for singing that is evident. So I have to ask myself, am I giving that? Am I giving that safe space to my students? And I think we do well to ask ourselves some other questions. I think we need to ask ourselves if we actually believe that music is important for everyone. And I think we also need to look at whether we are actually putting ourselves into the class or if we're just pretending that we're all in. And I think one way we can, well, I think we know in our hearts whether we are or not, but I think we will have two different outcomes. Between those two. And you also have to ask yourself if you're afraid of looking or sounding silly or of being laughed at. And if you can make mistakes and laugh at them yourself or make a joke of it. And maybe most importantly, I think I need to ask myself if I will allow myself to be vulnerable, even if it would end up that I get hurt. So my encouragement is, as teachers, we're going to have our fears in music, but let's not let ourselves be controlled by those fears, and instead let ourselves be vulnerable and just be uninhibited. You really don't have anything to lose except your pride, and that is supposed to go anyway. So be enthusiastic about this opportunity. It is an opportunity to connect with your students. So I get a mental picture, not so much of standing with your students and pointing somewhere and telling them where they're going to have to go, how they're going to have to do something, but instead having them with you and taking them along with you and showing them while they're around you. I think it's fantastic to make music a part of your classroom every day. I think that means singing with your students, whether it's in devotions, a quick song just to wake them up. That can be any time. Something with motions. I love motion songs. At a certain point in my teens, I thought I never would, but I do. You can sing any time with them. Listen to good music with them. And if there are songs that you particularly love, play them and tell them why you love the song. It's a good exercise in being vulnerable because they might not. They might think it sounds funny. Teach them new songs, not just for programs. You can also point out little interesting things in a song, like who wrote it and when it was written, where the song came from. You can connect it to maybe what you're learning in history or something like that. And then teach them beyond the book. You know, there are probably things that you as a teacher know, little interesting things that they don't have to know, but you might kind of draw them in a bit if you tell them. When you sing, teach your students to follow a leader. That means watching as much as they can, but especially at the beginning and ending of songs. Have them beat time with you, and that might mean you crossing your brain and beating backward so that they know which way to go when. Another simple thing is teaching them proper timing. So, you know, eighth notes sound different than a dotted eighth. A dotted eighth is going to bounce a little bit more. Just simple little things like that. And no matter what your voice range is, teach them to sing soprano confidently. I think it is so important for young children to sing soprano. I think it will stand them in good stead the rest of their lives. And also teach them to be more independent, to be able to, some might not be as confident as others, but teach them to be able to sing a little more on their own. Round songs are fantastic, even though you may get sick of them. Another thing I like to do is students sing the soprano and I sing a different part. Now, I have found with my grades that if I try singing higher than them, their foundation is just gone. I don't know why, but it seems like if they have the higher part, they can handle it better. Just show your students how to sing confidently. And I think it's a good idea to have in your mind what you'd like to hear from your students and make sure it's a reachable goal for them. And show them the sound that you'd like to hear. And don't expect them to be perfect, but do push them along toward excellence. There is a difference between perfection and excellence. All right, and then I'd like to look at just some really practical ideas for class and scheduling music class, some ideas and opinions that I have. So I'm going to start with schedule. So I'm curious how many of you would have music once a week. So a lot of curriculums are set up for that, and that makes a pretty long class, doesn't it? 45 minutes to an hour? Yeah. I have taught music some that way. So when I was a few years into teaching, I was introduced to the idea of having music more often. And so I was like, oh, I'll try it. And I decided, well, I'm going to have music every day. And I actually liked it. So I still do that. I have music 5 days a week. And how I break it down is I have a 20-minute slot. Now, music class does not always take that long, but that's what I have slotted. Some things that I do like about this, obviously a shorter class means I don't have to prepare as much to remember. And for the students, a shorter attention span is needed. There's also more repetition of the material that you're learning. For me, with having 5 classes a week, it leaves me a lot more space to skip if we need to. Like if the rest of our day is a heavy schedule, just take music out and have an extra 20 minutes. Or if we're sick, or if I'm sick, you can just take it out. I also like to use that music slot for maybe 2 weeks before programs. That way I don't have to fit program practice in, you know, already full schedule. And it also leaves you days to just review and sing if you want to. Now, you don't have to have music every day of the week. Even just putting it in 2 times a week would make a difference for you. I also do highly recommend waiting to start music class until you're into the school year a few weeks. In my experience, just that being able to get my teacher authority, if you want to call it that, a little bit going helps music class go more smoothly. It's not that you won't have to deal with things in music class, but I have bad memories of having to deal with things in music class. It just shuts it down so quickly. So, a few things then about an actual class, and very likely you already have some of these down pat if you've taught before. I'd say a bit sarcastically that first and foremost, keep all parts of the children moving as much as possible. No, but I think there is something in that of a child sitting still is going to move after about 10 seconds. So have them do things that keep them moving as much as you can. So first of all, in a class, I get them loosened up physically. Obviously not out of breath, or that would defeat the purpose. Get them loosened up and then warm up their voices. That can be so many things. I have some ideas here. High sighs, like I mentioned earlier. Glissando cards, and if you're not familiar with that, these big ones are glissando cards as well as these. Basically, you're tracing a line and they'd be doing it in the air and while they're making a noise. And usually it ends up with lots of giggles, unfortunately. And then you can also sing the scale or a variation of the scale, like do between all the notes. So do, re, do, mi, do, fa, and on like that. You can have them take a big relaxed breath and sing as many scales as they can and hopefully not pass out. There's also the inchworm scale that goes do, mi, re, fa, mi, sol, and so on and so forth. You can sing the scale with the hand motions, which are right here, starting from do and going up. And they're too confusing. It's do, re, mi, fa. Yes. So, la, ti, and do. Something to do with their hands. There's also a lovely little song that goes like this. I'll sing part of it. Do, a female deer. Ray, a drop of golden sun, me, a name I call myself, and it goes on. Anyway, we had a lot of fun with that one. You can also write the scale on the board, erase a note, and sing the scale, and skip the note. They have to think the sound in their head. Once you have them warmed up, get the cobwebs out of their brain by reviewing. You can use flashcards. Draw on the board, have them draw on paper what you tell them to draw. You could use a timed speed drill. It doesn't have to be long, obviously, if they're young. It could be note shapes, a speed drill of note shapes or types of notes or lines and spaces, depending what they've learned. Or you can go over a song you've been learning. And once they're all warmed up and ready to go, then you get to teach your new concept. And what I'd say about that is, in my experience, knowing my lesson inside and out, by memory as much as possible, was when I got the best results. Because the less you are in the book, the more you're going to be able to keep their attention. If you're having to, I'm not saying never to look at your book, but if you're having to find where you are, there's going to be something going on, probably. So know your stuff. Be able to use your own words as much as possible. So, in your curriculum, are there words that they'll tell the teacher to say? at all? Depending on your curriculum, it might not. If it does, I was told that that is for those who cannot express for themselves. So use your own words as much as you can. When you teach, draw, use your voice to show them what you're trying to teach them, use your hands, anything besides just words if possible. You can also use songs for games. The With Glad Voices curriculum is excellent for that. I think they have a song with a game in every lesson. It's just, I've wondered before what it actually teaches, but I like it. Yeah, you'd be familiar with it. You can also have them sing songs in different voices, like a whisper voice, or a talking voice, a singing voice, or a shouting voice, or if you're scared of the word shout, use strong or strongest voice. You can also use objects. You could have them tossing bean bags or bouncing a ball for the beat. You could have puppets for singing. Use a scarf or ribbon or paper streamer for learning phrases. You can also, for the beat or rhythm, use rhythm sticks or pencils for that. Or if you're afraid of the noise a little bit, you can roll up paper and tape it, and they can probably whack it as hard as they want. It won't be too loud. And you could make some things in art class for music, such as shaker eggs, which is basically any container with something rattly in it. So that could be rice or salt, you know, you could, or beans, or even a snack that they get to eat later. You can vary the sound you want to hear. You can also make drums, which is something that I want to do this year. So very simply, you take a tin can and a balloon, you cut the neck off the balloon, and then stretch it over the top of the tin can, and you have a drum. Depending on the size of the tin can, you'll have a different sound. You can decorate the outside. They say that if you do duct tape versus paper versus felt, it's going to make a different sound. Anyway, use your imagination. Those are just a few things. And then for the last part here, I'd like to touch just very lightly on curriculum and a few gadgets that I like. So we are currently using the Singing School series in our school. And I do have some examples here. So it is a newer Holderman curriculum. And I believe they made it with the intention of it being teacher-friendly. And I have found it very enjoyable and also simple to teach. It has lovely pictures, and maybe I'll just show you. So the orange is the A. We just have the one level. There's an A1 and A2.
We have the other one.
You have the other one. Okay. Well, anyway, they're all out. Lovely pictures with cool little information bits in it. And I feel like it has good coverage of content. And for our community, I feel like it's practical to the music culture. I would have, in previous years, taught the With Glad Voices curriculum. And since I have my notes and all of that, I actually do, and I have lots of class periods throughout the year, I do mix that in as well. Now, that would be the first to go if I don't have time. But I just like kind of having a rounded curriculum there. I think that no matter what your curriculum is, two things, anyway, that are important is that it covers music concepts well and that it's relevant to your community. And that doesn't mean that you might not need to change to make it more learnable. Just some other gadgets that I like, and I have a few of them up here. Glissando cards. These are from two different curriculums. I also like the hand note motions. I have flash cards, which go along with the singing series. Note shapes, types of notes, rests, lines and spaces, and to do with the jingles as well. And just timing and pretty much everything. I also like these little signs. So there is stop and go. There is B beat and rhythm. That will get them really mixed up. Soft and loud. And then these do go specifically with the With Glad Voices. So echo and solve means turning, you would just echo what I sang. Here you would turn it to ta, ta-di, ta-di, ta. Anyway, so. I also, like I mentioned earlier, I like to have colorful notes of the scale on the wall. And then this little songbook, you could probably have it even if you didn't use the singing school series, but it goes along with, and it just has all kinds of little songs, and some of them are absolutely hilarious. For anywhere from Seeky First to Marching Around the Schoolroom to, what's this one, Kookaburra, Baseball, Let There Be Music, The Railroad Corral, Miss Mary Mack, you know, just everything in there. I'm gonna leave this stuff out. You're welcome to look at it if you like. Come in here anytime. I also have two picture books that I found that I loved. They are true, based on true stories about perseverance and music in difficult situations. So in conclusion, singing is fundamental to who we are as humans and as God's children. A few little examples in the Bible stood out to me. So we read of the morning stars singing when the earth's foundations were laid. We can read of God singing over us. We can read of Jesus singing with his disciples. And the redeemed, which includes us, singing of God's redemption. Just for a few. Singing is something that can connect people for a lifetime. So as teachers this year, we get that opportunity to teach our students a little bit about music, to hopefully draw them into the joy and also the reward of singing. So the challenge I'd like to leave with you is, let's view that as the privilege that it is. It is a gift to us. And so I just wish you all courage to give it your best shot this year.